Welcome to Lesbians Who Write with Claire Lydon and T.B. Markinson. Conversations about writing and lesbian fiction. Join us as we draw back the curtain on the writer's life.
Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Lesbians Who Write with me, Claire Lydon. Forgot who I was then. I am Claire Lydon, and who is it on the other end of the call, way over there in Massachusetts? Do you like my American accent?
Is that your American accent?
Yeah. Do you like it?
Yeah. It is. Are you trying to confuse me again this time?
I am, aren't I? I really don't mean to mess up these intros, but I can't help it. Clearly it's a thing. But anyway, the wonderful, nay, the radiant today, T.B. Markinson. How are you today, T.B.?
I'm doing well. Radiant today, huh? That's an improvement. Last time you called me Titanic, which I have decided to live up to that reputation this my second week of total disasters.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
I'm blaming you. You've cursed me with Titanic, and now my life is just ruined from here on out. Thank you.
Well, it's good to know that nothing too bad has gone wrong then. Yeah, well, we'll get into that. So, well, tell us. Tell us, even though you are looking radiant and very un-Titanic, tell us about why your week has been a bit Titanic-y.
It's just been little things. I mentioned last week I had issues with my email account. This week it was Amazon driving me crazy while I was getting stuff ready for the iHeart Lesfic newsletter. All their links were wrong, so I had to spend... Usually it takes me a couple hours to do all the links and everything. I had to spend almost 8 hours yesterday working on this whole project, which was a lot of time, and I was not very happy about it. There was a lot of, I can't fucking believe Amazon is doing this to me today. a lot of throwing my my little poof ball that I throw at the wall when I'm upset. There was a lot of that.
Right. Well done. Well done on swearing, though, because we have got an explicit tag, so let's fucking swear today.
All right.
Do you know what I've been noticing this week in lesbian Facebook groups that I'm a member of? People have been talking about cussing, and is it okay to do it in books? I'm not going to bring that up because that's another topic for another day. But I just like to bring up the word cussing because it's a very American word, isn't it? I would never say it. Yeah, it's sort of almost twee, a bit sort of folksy. Yeah, so like a British person would never say the word cuss.
What would you say?
They might say, is the language a bit fruity or something like that? But they would
fruity. That seems more gay to me.
It does when I say it, you know. Yes, seem a bit gay, but no, it's not gay. You know, the word fruit can mean very many things in the British language.
Okay.
And that's why we love it. Anyway, back to your titanical week. But you had 8 hours. Did you get everything sorted?
I did. I got everything sorted. It went out this morning. It's always a relief when I get out the newsletter. And then, of course, every time when I usually do it, I'll get an email from an author, be like, oh, I need this change. And I'm like, oh, I told you not to do this. But, of course, I went in and made the change.
You're helpful and nice, as we discovered last week.
I am helpful and nice. And, like, let's be honest, we've all needed a favor. I like to pay it forward. But then I ended my, because I have sworn off being a wreck. This morning I woke up with a new attitude. But last night I ended off my night doing dishes and I broke one of my favorite plates. And then I was like, screw it, I'm going to bed. This is the worst day ever.
Sometimes it's just better to, you know, get back under the duvet. That's what happens sometimes. I just had a training session at the gym before this, so I'm a bit knackered. And my trainer was saying that she was having a duvet day. Because at one point she meant to, you know, up the speed and decrease the speed and incline on my treadmill, but she put it up. So she's like, and we'll just cool down. And then she just kept putting it up. I was like, are you going the wrong way? She should have stayed under the duvet.
Yeah, some days you just have to do it. There are days where, like, if nothing's going right, I'll just be like, I'll either go for a hike or I'll just go back to bed. But yesterday it was raining all day, so I couldn't go for a hike. That's my favorite method of dealing with when life just sucks. I like to get back to nature. And be reminded what's so beautiful out there. But no, yesterday it was raining, so I just went to bed.
Good plan.
Had a night. Yep. But what about you? What's going on with you?
Well, it's been Easter weekend, so that was very nice, and it was beautiful weather in the UK, so everybody in the UK is sunburnt, obviously, and we had the first barbecue of the season in our garden, which was lovely. We went for a picnic up in Greenwich Park on top of the hill overlooking London, so that was lovely as well. So there was nice things, and I also worked all weekend, so I decided that I have to get at least halfway through the Cotswolds but by the time I leave. And so I am now 30,000 words in. So I'm about 5,000 off. Yes, woohoo indeed. And so, so this last week I've written about 18,000 words. So that's pretty good. So I'm quite pleased with that. So that's been my week. So it's been kind of uneventful, but getting stuff done.
Well, that's good. I did do one fun thing. I did go see Amanda Palmer on Friday night. Ooh. That was a fantastic event. She's one of my favorite singers. She's not as well known throughout, but what I liked about her performance, it reminded me of that time when we went to the country music thing you took me to when I was in London in March, because before each song, she would do a intro and tell us a bit about, you know, what was going on in her life, the influences, why she wrote the song. And it was, as a storyteller myself, I found it very inspirational and insightful. So it was a fun night. And she's always entertaining because she has snark, definitely. She's mastered snark.
She has, yes. And she's just very impressive with all how she funds all her stuff and everything through crowd campaigns, because she has built up an amazing connection with her audience, and that's why she gets all the money. And that's what we were talking about last week, wasn't it? Build up the connection with your audience. And yes, you will reap the rewards, not just in money, but in just the work satisfaction is more the point.
Yes.
And doing what you love and connecting it with people is a fantastic thing.
Yes, build your tribe.
Find your tribe, build your tribe. So, yeah.
She did talk about how some people criticize her for building up funds and for using different services to finance her music. So you can never win it. You can never win everything.
You can't. But the thing is that people are very happy to support their favourite artists in whatever medium it is. So if they're happy to do it, then all power to her, I say. I read her book, The Art of Asking. I loved it. So, yeah.
I need to read that. I've only seen her TED Talk. I haven't read the book. I'm writing it right down. Art of Asking.
Yes, you should read it. So let's get on to comments. Comment monitor. I've got one, but you go first.
Okay, so I need to start off my comment section today with a bit of an apology. I've mentioned in the past that I'm not the best at technology, so I didn't realize that on iTunes when people were subscribing, they were actually leaving comments. So I have corrected this problem, and I have some comments to get caught up on.
Okay.
So the first one comes from J, and is this the letter J? So I'm sorry, I don't know your full name. And I'm not sure if you're male or female. So Jay says, it's fun to listen to you. And Jay is working on her or his first lesbian novel and is appreciating our insight. And we're not, this is my favorite part of the comment, we're not boring or stuffy.
That should be our tagline, right? Unboring, unstuffy.
We should just put it on t-shirts.
Yeah.
Just walk around.
Yeah, get it done.
Okay, so the next iTunes comment is from, again, I'm sorry, but this is all I can see is SX Hutch. So I am not sure if I'm getting that right at all or not. SX Hutch says it's fun and interesting and we're two favorite authors. Hello.
Oh, wow. That's really, oh, I've just got all like warm and fuzzy. Thanks, SX Hutch. Great name as well.
And she also has a shout out to you, Claire, saying that she loves your British accent and I should not take offense to that.
Well, you know, I'm sure there are, I think I really like American accents. So I think it's just wherever you are, you like the opposite, right?
Do you really?
Yeah, I think they're very sexy.
Growing up in America, I grew up in the Midwest. So in America, if I travel around America, I'm known for not having an accent because it's Midwest and it's not New York, it's not Southern or anything. And it wasn't until I moved to Britain and be like, oh, you have an accent. I'd be like, what? I don't have an accent. What are you talking about? Because all my life I was told I was accentless.
Yeah.
And when I moved there, everyone was like, oh, I love your American accent. And it kind of made me feel better about myself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not all American accents. I mean, obviously you are like, you know,
oh, of course,
the top.
Of course.
But not all American accents, but some American accents. I think it is just like where you, from what, if you're from Britain, America has always seemed a little bit, you know, exotic, isn't it? Possibly not so much now, but I think it's ingrained in my brain, you know, in my 10-year-old brain. TV is looking at me like I've gone mad.
Yes, a little bit, but I'm just going to press on with comments. And we have one final one from iTunes. Cincy Girl says, great insight, and she looks forward to more behind-the-scenes information from us. So we will try to bring it.
We will, every week.
And now we're moving on to comments from the website. Carmen commented on episode 8, and oh gosh, I have to include another apology. This one accidentally ended up in the trash and I had to pull it out. I am so sorry, Carmen. She thought episode 8 was chock full and insightful, and she appreciates what we do. Oh, also, I have to give her a shout out. She is a voracious reader and reads 2 to 3 books a week.
Wow.
So, and she appreciates KU. So I'm amazed. 2 to 3 books a week. Keep it up. Wow. We love readers.
We love readers, especially 2 to 3 books a week readers. We can't, unfortunately, we can't write 2 to 3 books a week, so soz Carmen.
Oh my gosh, that would kill me. But all right, and then we have 2 final comments that were on our website. Both comments are from Donna. On episode 6, she finds it amazing that we write most days. She can come up with reasons not to write, and not was typed in all caps, so she does have a way of finding reasons not to write. So I'd just like to give her a bit of encouragement. We do get up every day and we write, well, most days, unless we're like editing and such. But there are days where even I have to sit down and talk to myself and force myself to sit in the chair and just write. So it's not easy. What about you, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I'm first drafting, I do try to write every day just to keep the momentum going, keep the forward momentum going. So, yeah, at the moment I'm really busy at the moment because I'm getting ready to go away. I sat down this morning and wrote 1,600 words, and I hope to write a few more later.
All right, and then she commented on, I didn't write what episode, but she said that she's been catching up on our podcast, and we have her laughing at times, and that's such a nice comment. Thank you very much. I appreciate hearing that. I am one of those people who I prefer laughing over disasters or mistakes in learning experiences than, well, there are times where I'll break down, but laughing's easier.
Is that what I should try and make you break down?
You're going to try and make me cry on the podcast?
Yeah, I think that's a goal.
All right. Also, we inspired her. She hasn't been to a writer's conference in years, but she's considering going again to connect with fellow writers, and I highly suggest it. I know when I started making connections with writers, not just at conferences, but also in email and such, it not only changed my career, but I have gained friends, and so that's always nice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Going to events in person and meeting people in person, be they authors or readers, is never a waste of time. Unless you don't speak, you walk in and don't speak to anyone and then walk straight back out, then it is. So don't do that.
Try and be nice and make friends.
Yeah.
It's like what your mom tells you before you go to kindergarten, you know, don't kick people or spit or anything. Just be nice.
Yeah, be nice.
All right, so that's the comment roundup.
And I've got one more from Suzanne Fisher. She says she enjoys the podcast a lot. She listens to it on her commute from work to home, and it's great to get a few chuckles in. So that's great. And she says, interestingly, she finds that listening to the podcast adds quite a bit of depth to the characters of both our books. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Which characters, I wonder?
I don't know. Suzanne, get back in touch. Let me know.
Yeah, and the characters.
And TB, she agrees with you on the ice cream issue. Oh, no, I got it wrong. She agrees with me. Come on, Suzanne. Team Claire on the ice cream. I'm reading it wrong. She says chocolate and caramel are her favourite, and mint chocolate, not so much. It's a bit like eating toothpaste flavoured ice cream. See, I'm with Suzanne.
Ouch, ouch. That is like a dagger to the heart, but, you know, still love you.
So, shall we get on to our topic for the week? And this is the top 5, well, we're going to do top 10 tips for new authors, but we're going to split it up over 2 weeks. If we go too long, we might do 3, but we're going to aim for 2. Isn't that right, TB?
Yeah, just give me the, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to wind you up.
The signal. Like,
brevity cut it is the watchword.
What's the watchword?
Brevity.
I should have known that.
So we're gonna kick off with five tips for this week. And the first one is you have to love storytelling. TB, would you like to kick this one off?
I'll take it away. Yes, you do. You have to love storytelling because, first of all, I know there's a lot of people who have noticed that, you know, self-publishing and stuff, it can make money if you do certain steps and such, especially in certain genres, you will make money. But if, excuse me, but if you don't like storytelling, and if you're solely doing it just to make money, readers, I keep saying this, readers are not stupid. They can pick up on this and they can tell if you're a sincere storyteller or not. So you have to love telling a story. And not only that, when you start writing, it's always going to be in your head. Also, another thing is, this is not an easy career. I know there's some misconceptions that, like, we maybe just spend 2 minutes at the keyboard a day. But
if you listen to this podcast, you know it's not an easy career.
It's not an easy career. So if you don't enjoy it, why would you put yourself through it? Why? Once a fellow author a few weeks ago emailed me this cartoon, and it was kind of funny. It was like a teacher and this little girl named Susie. And the teacher, you know, is patting little Susie on the head and says, "This is a great story you wrote. You should be a writer." The caption is, "And thus Susie's life was ruined forever."
Yeah, poor Susie.
But it is a job that I find it very draining. I find it very rewarding as well. Yeah, it's a job that I commit 100% to, and it takes a toll on you. I won't lie.
Yep, no, I agree. You absolutely have to love it because there are easier ways to make money, like selling mint chocolate chip ice cream, I imagine, for a start, because who doesn't love ice cream? I mean, mint chocolate ice cream, a bit weird. But yeah, I have always written. I have, like many writers, you know, and to be honest, I do get a bit bored when people say this. They're like, "Tell me about your writing journey." And they go, "Well, I wrote my first book when I was 7. And, you know, it's the common story because it's true. Because it's like, you know, if you've got these stories in your head, some people might call it a form of madness. And maybe it is. But I've always had them in my head. And so getting them out has always been something that I've done. And I think it's in my family, I've got to say, but nobody else in my family. Well, no, my dad was a journalist for a while, so maybe there's some sort of genetic thing, but everybody in my family is a good storyteller. My family loves to tell stories. They love to sing, and singing is telling stories as well. And I think that I'm the first one who's got it down on paper, but I don't think I'm the only one with the skill. So, you know, it's something that's gone on for years and years and years. And I'm just lucky enough to be able to make a living from it now. And, you know, people do get really invested in your stories. So, and they're going to want to talk to you about them. And so if you're not invested in them, then they're going to know about it. And, yes, and you're going to have to keep talking about them. It's like, you know, pop stars who have to sing that same song that everybody loves over and over again. And they have to love it as much every time they do it. And you have to keep, if one of your books really took off, you know, think about Elizabeth Gilbert. She keeps having to talk about Eat, Pray, Love. I don't think she probably minds it. But, you know, that book, she keeps having to talk about it. And there are some books that people love, and like my London romance series, I love writing those, and I hope it comes through in the writing. And every time I write a new one, it's like coming back to a group of friends, and I am invested in them as readers are. So that's why I think you have to love storytelling. I agree, you do, it's true.
Yeah, I was surprised. I asked my partner once, because she asked me, she was saying, you know, "How do you always come up with these stories?" And I was like, "Well, I've been telling stories to myself ever since I can remember." I'm like, "You know, if, when you can't sleep, or don't you think of stories? Are you telling yourself stories?" And she looked at me and she was like, "No." And I was like, "Wait, you don't have stories going through your head like every second of the day?" She's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." And I was like, "I thought everyone did that."
Apparently not. It's weird, isn't it? I remember when I was little, I used to play swing ball, and I'm the youngest of 8 children. Do you know swing ball?
I have absolutely no idea what swing ball is. Is that what you guys call baseball?
No, swing ball is like, it was like a pole that you stuck in a garden, and it had a tennis ball on a string, and it went around. So basically it was like, if you had no one to play tennis with, you hit this ball around this sort of around this pole, and then you could just play tennis back and forth with yourself in the garden.
Is this a curse parks in Britain where
you are looking at me
friends.
Like I've made it up, but I really haven't. Swing ball was huge in the 80s, and so like picture me in my little shorts and t-shirt out in the back garden when I'm like 10 and I'm playing swing ball because I'm the youngest of eight. No one wants to play with me because they're all too old and cool to play with me, so I'm in the back garden and all I did while I played swing ball was make up stories.
So have you dedicated one of your books yet to swing ball?
I haven't, but, you know, looking back on it, maybe I should, yeah.
You should. Give love where it's due, Claire. Come on.
British readers or I don't know, listeners, European listeners, they'll know what swing ball is. Swing ball was huge. I can't believe it didn't make it to the States.
We had what we called tether ball, but it was like a bigger ball on a cord of some sort or a chain. But there was people on the side. You had to, like, get it past the other person, so... But I've never heard of swing ball.
You'll have to Google it.
I did hit a tennis ball against a wall, like a garage door. Does that count?
No, this was far more sophisticated. So let's get on. So tip number two is find a schedule or process that works for you.
Yes, this is one of the things. I read a lot of books and I listen to a lot of podcasts. I do sometimes get rather annoyed with certain authors and podcasters who will tell you this is a step-by-step guide of what you should do to become a successful writer. And then they usually start with the schedule that you should write and such. I'm the type of person where I'll read it and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I can get up at 5 a.m. and I can start bashing out words on the keyboard and I'll try it for like a few days and it works. But then... after the fifth day, I'm like, you know, I'm just not a morning person. This isn't working for me. And it can get very discouraging because you read all these stories about how people like they're like, you have to do this. You have to do it this way or you're going to fail. And I just think that's so wrong. I mean, you can read these books on how to do things and listen to podcasts and blog posts and stuff like that. But take what works for you, because how many people are on this planet? Billion? 7 billion? Are we up to 8 billion yet? I don't know. Everyone is different. So what I like to do when I do research and when I'm, you know, studying what works for other people is I like to take little nuggets from everybody and I've cobbled together a program that works for me, my personality, because, you know, I can be a bit odd. And I think most writers are a bit odd, let's be honest.
I can verify that. She can be always... really odd. Really odd.
Goes back to that, I always have voices in my head telling me stories. So it's just another form of insanity. You have to be flexible in this. And also you need to realize that sometimes even if you develop a program that works for you, there's one day it's going to break. We're human. And keeping to the same schedule, you got to be flexible. Otherwise, it's going to become so daunting. And sometimes you just need to take a break or switch things up. If you're writing every morning and that's not working, switch it up to afternoon or evening. But you have to keep changing and you have to keep reevaluating. But keep writing. That's the important part. You have to figure out ways so you can keep writing. So if you read something and someone says you absolutely have to do it this way, A, don't believe anyone that says you absolutely have to do it this way. Because it's just not right. I don't like being told what to do. Maybe it's just my own personality problem. But if you tell me something...
Yeah, I think that's most people, isn't it? If someone tells me what to do, I might not tell them to fuck off, but that's what I'm thinking in my head.
Good job with the fuck off!
Thank you! I thought I'd get another one in. Look at me cussing.
Cussing up a storm over there! Jeez! But, so, yeah, what about you? What do you think about schedules and processes? The processes or process-y?
I don't know. Comment and tell us. Is it processes or processes? That sounds like a fake leg.
Help the writers. We don't know what words.
It sounds like a fake leg now to me. So that's all I'm thinking. Is that a prosthetic? Yes, I agree. Totally. I just think things change all the time, as we said in our change episode. And to say a lot of people, as you rightly say, here's what you should do. You should write in the morning and you should do all your marketing in the afternoon. Well, that's all very well. I did try and do that for a while, and sometimes I still do it. and I have a perfect day. Like, I have a perfect day in my mind where I think, oh, well, you know, I'll write for 2 or 3 hours in the morning, and I go for a nice walk, and then I'll come back and I'll do, like, 2 or 3 hours of marketing. But that perfect day doesn't happen that often because things get in the way and life happens. So you have to be flexible, like you said. But my process, I don't really have a particular one. And I'm quite happy with that, actually, now. Because I do try and get some words done in the morning. I might not hit my word count, but I'll get something done. But, you know, it changes with every book and it depends on the deadline I've got. So when I wrote, I wrote a book, a first draft in 3 weeks in January. And that was because I had a deadline to hit. And so I went off to a cottage and wrote for 9 hours a day. I didn't do anything else. But that's just one book. I'm not doing that this book. I'm back to doing a couple of hours a day in writing. And so just know that it will change. And like you said, don't listen to everybody else because what they do might not work for you. I actually listened to a really good podcast this week on the Tim Ferriss show. If you don't listen to Tim Ferriss show, it's a very good podcast to listen to. And he interviewed Neil Gaiman, who's a very famous author. And Neil Gaiman has been writing for, you know, 30, 40 years. And he was talking about process and how it changes all the time. And so he used to write from 9 o'clock at night till like 6 o'clock in the morning. That was his writing time because he had young children and they were in bed. So that's what he did. Now he writes from 1 till 6 in the afternoon. And he was sort of saying he's never been a morning writer, but he said maybe in his dotage he'll become a morning writer. It's not out of the question. So it will just change. There's another podcast that people should listen to called How Do You Write with Rachel Herron. And that is just all about process. And so you can hear other people's. I'm always fascinated to hear other people's, but it's not mine.
I love to listen to process, and I will have to listen to Neil Gaiman because he's one of my favorites. Do you know who he's married to?
Amanda Palmer.
Yes. But so yeah, I'll have to listen to that. But I love to hear about other authors, their process and everything, and I do listen to quite a few podcasts about it, but then I'm like, yeah, that won't work for me. But I love to hear how other people do it, and I also love to hear how other people are like, it's hard. Yeah. Because I'm like, there are some times where you're like, is it this hard for everybody else, or am I just making it really this much harder for myself? And then you like do listen to other authors and such, and you're like, okay, yeah, it sucks sometimes. There are bad days.
I think the thing is, though, just as long as you're keeping the forward momentum and doing something every day, and maybe you don't write every day, but you're doing something. Making your own schedule is always hard and sticking to it. So do you know what? I think sometimes you have to pat yourself on the back because you and I both get books out and words done. So pat yourself on the back.
Yes. I'm doing it. Wait, you're not doing it. How can you not pat yourself on the back?
Because of my shoulder. My shoulder still hurts.
Oh, no, still
I just went, oh, trying to pat myself on the back. It's not good today.
Hurt you.
Top tip number 3. Don't expect perfection.
Yes, I had a professor way back in the day. I think this was my first degree. I can't remember exactly who it was or anything, but she said something to us. We all had a deadline for a paper, a research paper. Even though it was for a research paper, I've taken this piece of advice into my writing career as well. And she once told me, a project is never done. There are only deadlines. You can fiddle with a manuscript for the rest of your life, and it will never be exactly the way you want it to be.
Yeah. And some people do. They never get the book out.
Yeah. You know, you read stories about authors who are like, oh, they finally published a book and they've been working on it for like 3 decades. And you're like, wow, can you imagine working on one book for 3 decades? I would go insane.
And you wouldn't remember do you think they just have to keep rereading it because they don't remember it?
Oh, weird. Absolutely. Yeah, because like, well, maybe, I don't know, because I know like some of my books that I penned a few years ago, like I'll have to refresh my memory about the character names and the settings and such, or like a reader will email me and be like, oh, I love this one scene. I'm like, what scene was that again? Wait, hold on a second. Let me figure it out. But I guess if you're doing it every day for like 30 years, I guess it is kind of stuck in there, but you have to learn to let the story go. Your beta readers, your editors and such will help you with that. But yeah, it's the first book is always, at least for me, it was the most difficult one to be like, okay, this is done. I can't do any more with this. This is done. And it does, for me at least, again, get easier with each book. I can know when it's time to go to press, but it's never going to be perfect.
No. In the words of Elsa, let it go, let it go. I'm something, one with the wind and snow. Thanks. I totally agree. The thing is, life's not perfect and your work will never be perfect. And I've sent books to press that have been through maybe 30 pairs of eyes, two editors, a proofreader, and there's still been mistakes. Not many, but you know, there might be the odd typo or the odd missing word.
Yes.
The thing is, you can fix it. That's the beauty of the modern day, and especially if you're indie publisher, you can go back in and you can fix it. And you can even if the print book's gone to print, you can just upload a new file. So nothing, and don't worry about it. It's not a matter of life and death. That's the point as well. The world is not going to fall apart because you've got a typo in your book. But do try and get it as perfect as you can. That's not a free pass to just say, oh, that'll do. Like you say, as you go on, you'll learn when it's okay to just let it go. But I have to say, I don't have such an issue with perfectionism. I think maybe because of my journalistic background, in that when you're doing articles, there's a deadline, and there's always deadlines every day. And so you just have to get it to press, and you know that they're going to be mistakes sometimes. That's life. Get over it. Neil Gaiman had an interesting thing to say about this as well. He was saying that don't get it right, get it written. And it's the same goes for every stage of the draft. And at one project he was finding very difficult, and so he just wrote 50 words a day just to move it forward. Perfection is the enemy of a writer, and your first draft will always be terrible, but you can make it better. So, okay, tip number four, research.
Yes, this is a dangerous one, because we've talked in the past about how you need to do research and stuff. So there's two different types of research this can include. It can include research for a story. Say you're doing historical fiction and you want to do research, or you can do research on marketing and publishing and such. And it is possible to completely overdo it on research, especially like, say you're trying to write a historical fiction. You can spend years trying to master everything that's going on in the time period you're writing about. You can have the correct term for all the different parts of clothing and the dialect that's spoken during that time and such. And you can just drown yourself with this and not actually get a word written. And here's something. I'm a historian, so this is coming from a historian. Most readers of historical fiction, I mean, they will ding you if, like, you have it totally wrong and such, but they're more interested in story. They're not going to sit there and bash you because you said the wrong kind of button or something. I'm not a costume person.
I would email you and say, you got the wrong button.
I usually get the, you know, your buttons are wrong. They're not matching them. They're not aligning on my shirt. I have gotten that. And also, when it comes to marketing, you can also do so much research about how to market a book, or especially for indies and such, or different platforms you can use. And you can you'll never learn it all. There's just not possible. There's so much information, especially in today's world with the internet and all the podcasts and everything. You're not going to learn it all. So you kind of have to know when to say, it's time. I know what I need to know to write this historical fiction, or I know what I need to know to do marketing and such, but you have to have like kind of like a deadline in mind of when you want to reach these goals. And not, and you can use research as an excuse. I do it sometimes as well, like especially if I'm like, oh, you know what I really want to do today? I want to watch this TV show, and I'm going to count that as doing research. And so you're going to spend days binge watching a show and kind of convince yourself that you're being productive. But sometimes you're using it as a crutch.
Yes, no. So you could say that, but when you see my new book, Queer Eye for the Lesbian, you'll realise that me binge watching Queer Eye was all brilliant. Actually, you know, like when we were talking about writing a reality TV one, weren't we? So that means I have to binge watch loads of reality TV, the ones I like anyway.
What was it? Married at First Sight or something?
Yes, Married at First Sight.
I still can't wrap my head around that. I just can't.
Research. I used to think, and probably still do in some ways, that I'm not brilliant at research. Definitely not for the business portion of it. But however, I just think I'm being a bit hard on myself. I do okay. Research for stories. I have done some for some of my books, and some of my books I haven't at all, because it's kind of like you kind of know it, and then you can read up. I suppose when I think about research, I think about talking to people at the coalface. So I won't always do that. Sometimes I'll just read newspaper articles or watch YouTube videos or things like that, and that is valid as well. But for my latest novel that just came out last month, You're My Kind, that was set in a cake school. One of the lead characters runs a cake school, and I actually went and spent a couple of days in the cake school with a woman, purely because it was local, it was in Greenwich, and she was very willing to be interviewed. So that was easy, but sometimes it's not so easy, and so you rely on the tinternet. But like you say, don't go down rabbit holes, otherwise you'll lose days and you won't have got any closer to your story.
That's true, that's true. I have lost many a days, because I love research. I'm a nerdy historian. Two of my series, the Miracle Girl series and the Chosen One series, there's a lot of research that goes into that. And I will admit, I will just keep reading books because I enjoy it, but I also am working on the story.
God, will you stop reading books? It's just a terrible thing for an author to say. I think reading books is okay. I'm going to give you a pass on that one. All right, then. And the fifth tip for this episode is, once you become a writer, it'll be hard to get your brain to shut off.
Yes, I realized this early on, because when I had a corporate job, I had a much easier time. When I clocked out for the day, I could kind of flip a switch in my brain. Unless I really hated that job, but that was a different story. But I can usually just flip a switch in my head and switch from, you know, working to this is my downtime and such. But when I started writing professionally, I realized that the stories in my head were always there. And part of it was because when I was working in an office job, my downtime was filled with me telling stories to myself to keep myself entertained and everything. And now this became my actual career, and so it added a bit of pressure to me, and I realized that I was constantly thinking about my characters, constantly thinking about plot holes and such like that. And I've had to learn how to teach myself how to still not kill that side of me, because that's obviously how I get my ideas, but how to cope with it and how to still be able to have fun and not just work constantly, because you do need a break.
Yeah, I think it's very hard, actually, because it's not only that you're a writer, it's that you're running your own business. And so where you're writing is normally your house, or even if you don't write there, you do your business here. So you can never shut off fully. Your laptop's always there, you know, your list of things to do, you know, that are in that room. And so it's very hard to shut off unless you change your environment. And even then, I know that looking back at this is ridiculous, but I still do it sometimes. And I try not to. I used to, if I couldn't sleep, I'd try and sleep by thinking up twists to the story I was working on. That's not going to get your brain to shut down and relax, is it?
No.
You don't find that in a meditation book anywhere. So here, there's a top tip from me. Look, there's an extra tip for this episode. Try and fall asleep by thinking of story ideas. It doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, but also there are times, though, where, like, sometimes when I'm just out and about on a walk, or sometimes I get some of my best ideas, and this is a danger zone I'm going into right now, but I get some of my best ideas in the shower, and I'll be like, oh, my God, that's what my character needs to do. But so, I mean, obviously you don't want to shut that part of your brain off completely, because it does help. But you still need to live life, and you can't just solely work. If you're just dedicating your entire existence to your characters, you're really going to go insane.
And we don't want you to go insane. We're here to go insane on your behalf. Do you know what? I've heard that shower thing from so many writers. And it doesn't happen with me, and I'm a bit sad about it, I have to say. I go into the shower every day, like, all right, come on, let's have some brilliant story ideas. And I switch the water on, get the shampoo, and I'm like, yep, nothing, zip, nada, fuck my life.
I don't go in thinking that way. Maybe you're psyching yourself, you're putting too much pressure on the shower. It's a sacred thing, this shower, and then it will come to you.
Yeah, it's never happened, even when I'm not thinking about it. So I think I'm missing some sort of writer gene or some sort of writer.
Yeah, I think you're defective.
Yeah, I am. I am a defective writer, everyone. And that is how we're going to finish this episode. So, well, I hope, I think those tips were fabulous, and we've expanded on them very well. What did you think?
I feel good about it. I'm feeling positive. Good. I would like the listeners to let us know, comment on our website. Let us know about the tips.
Let us know if you agree. Let us know if you've got any tips that you want to share with us, because this is a two-way street, a two-way conversation, a two-way anything else that you can think of apart from ice cream flavours, which are just one-way street, and depending on which side of the street you're on. All right, then. So comment, let us know what you think, and we will be back next week. Well, actually, we're going to record this straight after, so we'll be back in a minute. do comment, and thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Lesbians Who Write. Listen in every week for more conversations on writing and lesbian fiction. And you can make sure you never miss an episode by signing up to our newsletter at lesbianswhowrite.com. Also, if you could take a moment to leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast, it would help more people to discover us. Thanks so much, and see you next time.